What the fuck is this?
Fucking thing sucks!
Why?
Disappointed!
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Shitty Song of the Week.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Shitty Song of the Week, the show where I'm a host, Brandon, and joining me this week, host of the Boomer Bob Show, we got Boomer Bob. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on, bud.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, man. But before we dive into everything, people be sure to check us out on Twitter over at Shitty Song Pod and leave us a voicemail over at 910-370-1604 with all your shit song suggestions and reviews. And while you're at it, be sure to check out our Patreon page over at patreon.com/SSOTW. Sign up, become a glutton for punishment to get access to bonus content every single month. Now, I'm excited about this one. We're gonna do something a little different than what we usually do on this show. You came to me with an idea that I'm all about doing. We're going to be diving into the evolution of one song in particular.
Well, yeah, I mean, you had hit me up back in January, I believe it was, to, you know, maybe come on the show. And it really took me this long to find something. I don't want to do what everybody else does. I want to be a little bit different, you know, and so it took me this long because everything that's been released to me in the last 20 years is fucking garbage.
Yep.
There's just too much music out there. I think we need a moratorium on any new music being uploaded unless it does to the music industry what artists like Elvis or Metallica or Nirvana did to the industry, you know, change everything. There's just too much shit being released every hour of the fucking day.
Oh yeah. So absolutely. And look, you know, there's always exceptions to that. You're always going to find good music. But as far as anything mainstream or what you're going to be pushed to listen to, it's absolute dog shit.
Well, I have those, you know, friends of mine who are like, hey, man, did you hear the new blah, blah, blah album? And I'm like, no, nor did I hear the other 3,000 fucking bands that uploaded an album this morning. I just can't keep up. So just fucking just leave me out of it.
I agree, and that's one of the downfalls with the internet. Everyone feels like they're an entertainer, and like, you know, I'm not one to talk. I'm fucking trying to entertain people on a podcast here, but everyone thinks that they can record their song and post it online and become like some next big celebrity or something from it, and it never fucking works that way. It's so rare to see actual success like that.
It's a tough road. I get it. If you've got the fire in you and you have to get it out and it's your dream, whatever. It was my dream too. That's why I skipped college till I was 27 years old, because I thought I was going to be a fucking rock star. And you know what? Things don't really work out the way you dream them.
Oh, absolutely. So tonight we're going to be diving into, we're bringing back a repeat offender on here. We're going to be talking about some Limp Bizkit this evening.
Yeah.
you proposed this idea. I fucking love this. I wasn't aware of this sort of thing. And, you know, I used to be a bit of a Limp Bizkit fan, so I'm shocked that I didn't pick up on this. But apparently, there's a little bit of an evolution with one particular song, and it doesn't get much better.
Come on. Get the fuck up. You know, I'm not going to lie. I limped with the Bizkit, you know, like Ben Stiller says at the end of one of their albums. I mean, I was limping with the Bizkit. I wasn't the JNCO jeans, chain wallet, skateboarder, you know, mad at my parents. I was about 10 years older than everybody else that was into that band. I'm immature, but I did enjoy whenever $3 Bill came out. I was like, oh fuck, that shit's awesome. I loved it, but they just took a dive. Like, I knew that what they were doing wasn't gonna last very long. Like, it would get old. Like, it would get stale very quickly.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah, Limp Bizkit, I was young when that caught on my radar. I got that Significant Other came out, and I was probably like in the fourth or fifth grade. It was one of the first albums that I remember actually having to sneak from my parents because it had the explicit warning label on the front of it. Right. Yeah, so I mean, it was always a guilty pleasure of mine because I couldn't share that I was listening to it. But, you know, looking back on it, it's not great music.
Well, you know, that album is that, I forget if that's the album that had Break Stuff on it. Flash Your Ass with a Chainsaw, you know, and I'll Skin Your Ass Raw.
Yeah, it had Break Stuff and Nookie and, yeah, like all the hits that anyone really knows from them.
You know, like I said, I enjoyed their music. I didn't like every song on the album, and I was in a band at the time that we catered to the college crowd and that goes to bars. So we played lots of Limp Bizkit. We played Godsmack. We played Creed. We played whatever was hot on the radio, and that's what brought them in. And we got paid very well to do so. So I'm not mad at Limp for existing. I'm just upset for what they did with this particular song, you know, and how it, I guess, evolved into two crappier songs.
So why don't we dive into it and start talking about what we're going through here? I don't know if you want to start with the original version of this.
Yeah, while touring for $3 Bill, and they toured for a couple of years on that album trying to gain traction, and they headlined a tour called Ladies Night in Cambodia. And what that tour was meant to do was to diversify the band's fan base. They noticed that their fan base was a fucking sausage fest. It was a bunch of young guys. So they offered free tickets to women or girls to come into the show.
Okay.
And that plan actually worked. It brought in more chicks, but so I'm gonna assume that the name of this song, the live version of this song, Cambodia, came from that Ladies Night in Cambodia tour. So it doesn't seem unthinkable that young women weren't interested in being around an audience full of a bunch of JNCO jean wearing skateboarders rocking chain wallets and maybe C minus averages in school.
Right.
So I don't blame them for doing this. I think it's smart, but this song, they did a live version of it, which is great because I'm going to guess that they wrote this song on the road, on the bus, and they got to jam it during like sound checks and that kind of shit. And what they would, that's a good thing because I've done that too with my bands, and you get to test the song live,
right,
on the audience to find out if A, it works. Plus you dial in your ability to play the song so that when you do go into this studio, you've already got it down because you've been doing the song every night for months and months.
Oh yeah, it's a great way to workshop new material.
Exactly. But what they did with this song is when they went to the freaking studio, they basically split Cambodia up into two other songs. Now we're really gonna only point at one of them. The other one's equally as shitty, but this isn't a 1 hour show, so anyway.
Yeah. And you know, you made the point that you think that Cambodia was written on the tour bus and you slapped together real quick and thrown up on stage. I'm going to go one step further with you. And I think that West Borland might have had a couple of the riffs, written down or whatnot. And the drummer went along with it. But I'm pretty sure, because it sounds like Fred Durst is improvising this entire thing the entire time he's up on stage.
Well, back then I was in a band too, like I said, and I don't mean to keep fucking going there. It's just to
like frame a reference.
Kind of, yeah, take you with me. We wrote songs in the motel room and then would actually have the balls to play them live. And the vocalist like was actually, reading words off of a page that he wrote in the fucking motel room. So we've done that too, and they were good songs. The only copies that I've got of those songs are live because we never did them in this studio. But it's a great idea, and it does work. But I hate what they did with this particular song. I love the music to Cambodia. I hate what Fred Durst did to it on all three versions.
Okay, well let's start listening to it here. This is the Family Values Tour 98, and the song's Cambodia.
Check.
And if there's anywhere you want me to pause it at, just let me know.
Are you ready, baby? Are you ready? Fuck up!
So that part right there, that was the part that they used for a song called Trust, which is track 11 on Significant Other. That song's just lame on its own, and I think it needs its own episode. To me, I'm a fan of the new metal thing. I dig the hip hop kind of beats. I like the DJing, all that stuff. I love the drop tuned guitar riffs.
Right,
that's my thing. I still write like that today because I'm a fucking boomer. But where they take the song, it just instantly goes into shitland really quickly. The fucking chorus. To me, both musically and vocally, are just absolute dog shit.
Yeah, and right now it's hard for me to shit on, because if this was a studio recording right now, this would be a part where I'm shitting on them to tell them to get on with it. But this is a live performance. This is the sort of stuff that you want to hear. You want them to go on for a little extra longer. It gets you pumped up and shit. So right now, it's not the worst thing that you're gonna hear.
Well, I think that they actually opened with this song. Like when they came out on stage, this was the song that they opened with once this was on the list. And
that's a fucking bold move.
I mean, to me, that what we just heard has a lot of energy to it for that kind of music, that kind of an audience. They're going to be jumping up and down right away.
Right.
Which is cool. But they take this song, they take a hard left into what the fuckville.
Well, I think what happens here, and you're going to hear it. Fred Durst is a little upset with the amount of people moshing in the pit, and he gets a little butthurt by it. So, which I think is fucking hilarious.
There's definitely not enough people on the fucking floor.
I have been there.
You people, come on. Get up.
What the fuck? What the fuck was that? Is he riding a horse? Yeah, woo-ah. What the fuck? Now, I have had my vocalist go, hey, we need some more people on the floor. I mean, I have recordings of him doing that, and I'm like, just then be better. On stage, they'll get on the floor on their own.
Yeah, and if you want that, you don't acknowledge it. I'm going to laugh at that. That's the only part of this performance I'm going to take away from, is that you were upset there weren't enough people into this song.
Well, like I said, be better.
Yeah.
Put more energy into it. They'll get on the floor. It's Jesus.
Well, I don't know. This sounds like they're going full Biscuit. So, I mean, they're giving it their all right now. He's even throwing out like Ric Flair woos and shit. Like, what the fuck is that?
I don't know, man. Disappointing. This song really did break my heart when I first heard it. Like, because I was a fan,
Oh, yeah. It's about to take a drastic fall off the cliff here.
Just as many as you.
See, that's where the acid kicked in for the rest of the fucking band. Like,
wait a minute. I see your mouth moving, but I don't hear a word. Yeah, exactly. I can't hear a word you're saying. Speak up.
And granted, it's a live performance, so I'm not expecting pristine audio quality, but he's literally like slurring and mumbling his way through this verse.
It's like he didn't have any lyrics at all. The band had the song down. He's just like, you know what? Roll with it. I'll just make something up on the fly. But they've done this song. There's countless fucking videos of the song being done live on that same tour on YouTube. So, this ain't the first time they've done it.
And Wes Borland is like one of the most infuriating guitarists to me.
Yes.
Like when he's doing the heavy riffs and whatnot, I can get into it, But when he does this shit, it's like he's a, I'm a huge Buckethead fan. So yes. I've listened to a lot of their shit. I'm very familiar with his body of work. It sounds to me like Wes Borland wants to, like, he wanted to be a part of that Corn Bugs side project that he had for a little while. Yeah, yep. And it's just, it's so fucking awful. And not everybody can play two or three notes and try to be creepy with it and make it sound good and shit. Wes just needs to stop with it.
Well, that song had a lot of energy for, you know, new metal shit. That song had a lot of energy going, and it instantly fucking died. You might as well have, like, murdered somebody right there on the stage when they went into that verse.
Yeah, amazing horrible. Transition.
Big time. Please hurry up. Fuck.
Like, look, I at this point, I know people are familiar with who Limp Bizkit is and what their deal is. So, like, this shouldn't come as a shock to anybody. But I imagine most of the people in the crowd at this point were just standing there confused as fuck as to what was going on.
And I'm well, you know, this song not being on any of their albums or any of that kind of stuff. So the audience had probably never heard this song before, and unless they saw them live at another show. But that I would have just been like in the audience going, what the fuck are they doing? They're taking a nap. What just the hell's
just,
going on?
Just
here?
Tell them to start playing Nookie and get on with it.
Exactly.
And I'm going to back it up for a minute because this, like, I don't know what the fuck he's doing with his vocals here. It's like he's actually trying to sing for a brief moment. What the fuck is that?
He's going to keep it all underground while he's on MTV.
I would rather listen to 4 minutes of that and Fred Durst just saying "woo-ha" throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, or going, "Yeah, come on, get up."
That would be genius.
Keep on rolling, baby.
That's all this was just like Wes Borland rhythm and Fred Durst just hyping you up for a song that never comes. That would be amazing.
Exactly. Nailed it.
Yeah. It's like a real Yoko Ono moment.
What do you know about this, punk? What do you know about that? About what?
Cambodia.
That's the other thing. I mean, I had no idea about the Ladies of Cambodia tour, so I had no idea where the name came from. I thought they were talking about an actual geographic location. Like on a map.
You so, would think that, yeah.
Don't worry, this thing takes a turn because lyrically he starts to throw out a bunch of 1970s references to music and weird. Fuck, disappointing. Disappointing.
Yeah. Why?
Is that the chorus?
What did he? Okay,
he's doing it twice.
Okay,
because he does it twice.
Yeah, but he's changing the words up. So, like, is there a hook to this song? Because I think the hook is just like the rhythm guitar.
Well, I thought that the chorus was the "Wah, Cambodia." I thought that was the chorus, but apparently it's this "Hey, wait a minute" thing. God,
it's so fucking dumb. Shelter, shelter, skelter, the J-Ball betcha, the Beatle upset ya, but I'm an easy rider.
like I'm Henry Fonda, the King of Biscuit. The flow's beyond y'all. So highway's my path, you can't stop the unexpected. So check your roadblock, oh black water. Keep on rolling, cause this mic is mine, and I'ma keep on shining on you.
This.
That was Doobie Brothers. It was Old Black Water, Keep On Rolling.
Yeah. It's become one of my favorite parts of this show when we were able to highlight these. Like, not since LFO and Summer Girls has a band decided to throw so many old boomer fucking references into a song that make no fucking sense.
Yeah, well, we haven't gotten to the other song yet.
Oh,
so.
I know. That's a little different, though.
Being brutal.
All right, so there's about 40 seconds left of this. Let's just finish this turn.
Really? Are you sure? Do we have to? I don't think your audience would mind if we just skipped it. But go ahead.
Are you sure? Let's see. That's a beat. Yeah, that's about all I need to hear.
Yeah, honestly, it's just more of that and him going, get up.
Yeah.
Like, are they at like a square dance where you have to order people around on the dance floor?
Well, he's just really upset that no one has gotten up and enjoyed this song. So I swear to God, it's like he gets ramped up and he's into it and he's like, woo-ah! And he's all for it and shit, and no one's getting into it. So then the band just dies and they get real sad for a few seconds.
With those fucking verses, he shouldn't be telling anybody to get up because they might get up and just walk the fuck out of the place.
God, if that was their opener, that would be the boldest fucking move for them.
Hey, man, I paid $27 to hear Nookie. I'm not leaving. You know, I got my chain wallet and everything.
Yeah. Whew. Okay, so that is 1998. Let's travel ahead to, I think it's like, what, 99, 2000, when Significant Other came out?
Yeah, the album came out in 99, and they had quite a few like guests on the album, you know, cameo type shit where they, you know, like featuring so and so and so and so. And, you know, this isn't like, say, like Cypress Hill. They did two versions of the same song on the same album. They did Rock Superstar with Chino from Deftones and Everlast.
Right.
And then they did Rap Superstar with Eminem and Noriega. And they were both on the same album, one towards the beginning, one towards the end. But that was so they could have like a crossover genre crossover hit kind of thing. And they did, because on the rock radio, I heard Rock Superstar, and on the rap radio, I heard Rap Superstar. This isn't like that at all, what they did with the song.
No, it's like they listened back to that recording and said, I like the guitars, but I don't like anything else about it. So let's change that.
Well, and the other thing, and okay, I understand having a song that the band plays to, you know, get the crowd going. I mean, that's an opening. That's opening band shit. Hyping up the crowd and getting them worked up for the main event. But at this point in their career, Limp Bizkit was already kind of headlining tours, although not big giant ones, but they were still the top of the bill. They were even on Spin Magazine, like on the front of it. I mean, that's pretty big for a band back then. So why write a song just to hype up the crowd? Just play fucking Break Stuff or Nookie. Go to the gold. What sold 40 million albums?
And if you're gonna write a song, Todd, just for the purpose of hyping, like, because that'd be a great idea to write a song just to hype up a crowd for a live show that you would never release on a studio album. You know, give people a reason to come out there and shit. But what you don't do is hype them up and then drop them down and then try to bring them back up again. You're not fucking Tool. You can't do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this. This next song we got here is, what is it? Show Me What You Got.
Show Me What You Got, track 13 on Significant Other.
All right, and let's just see exactly how this song has evolved.
Keeping it real, worldwide, baby. Limp Bizkit's in the house to bring it on.
What the fuck?
The millennium.
Well, at least he kept the important stuff.
Yes, that is true. just, I'm not a fan of being told what to do, man. I have a oppositional defiance disorder. So him telling me to get up makes me want to turn it off.
Oh, yeah. And I hate when studio recordings start out with, I'd like to dedicate this to, or I want you to get it. Like, that's the sort of shit that you do at a live show. That you don't need to bring that to a studio recording.
Well, you know, at the end of this album, they had a weird kind of interlude where Ben Stiller, the actor, is on the album kind of just talking shit.
Yep.
And being kind of weird. And on their next album, Chocolate Starfish and Hot Dog Flavored Water, say that 27 times in a row, he actually opens one song with, this one goes out to Ben Stiller. You are my favorite motherfucker. This guy loves doing drops. I think at the end of this album, at the very end of it, he plays all these like voicemails off of his phone.
Yep.
Into the mic, what? And it's all like, we're supposed to know who Johnny is or Stan is or whatever. And these are all guys who back then, if you dropped their name, you're like, oh, really? You're hanging out with him. But now they're like, who is that? I don't even know who the fuck that is. Yeah. And who the fuck does that? That's on their album. Who the fuck? Oh, look, me. I know this guy. I know that guy. Get the fuck out of here. Just play your music and shut up.
For some reason, in the 90s and early 2000s, it was skits in albums were a huge thing. Like, you'd have separate tracks that were just like bizarre skits like that. And I could think of a few bands that did that same exact thing where it was just them playing random voicemails off of their phones, and that was an entire track. And it's so unnecessary.
Well, this guy had beefs with virtually everybody he dealt with professionally. He had. Fucking beefs with the band Taproot. I don't know if you remember them.
Yeah, yep.
They something about, because you know, Durst, after $3 Bill, while on that tour, he got the job as senior vice president of A&R.
Okay.
At the label, like, you don't get to, like, I don't know whose dick he sucked, but he definitely gobbled some cock for that one. and so he got to sign other bands too. That gave him an even fucking bigger head. So they had to make a bigger, you know, red cap for him. And he got to sign bands like Cold and Stained and Coldplay. Sorry, not Coldplay. I just brain farted. Taproot. You know, those kind of bands. Well, I guess Taproot made him mad. Wouldn't wait for him. And they went with another label, and Durst called him up, left him a voicemail, cussing him out. You'll never work again, motherfucker. You'll never play a stage ever again, you know. So this guy's got a severe ego. He got in a fight once with Scott Stapp from Creed backstage. They were both playing the same show. And it was over who goes on first. And since Creed at the time had sold more albums, Creed won, I guess. And so he goes out, takes the mic, goes out there and is like, yeah, this motherfucking egomaniac backstage thinks he's all that. Motherfucker ain't shit. I'll kick his ass. Like, what? Like, he didn't call out his name or nothing, but we all knew who the fuck he was talking about. What a dick. This guy's just got issues, man.
Oh, God damn. That's a whole other fucking train wreck.
And again, he did get to bang Britney. So.
Oh, God damn. Well, this, you know, the lyrics to Cambodia were interesting because it was just a bunch of droning nonsense and him wailing for about 4 minutes. This song takes a different direction, and what we're about to get is essentially 3.5 minutes of shoutouts.
Pretty much, yes. And I think that's going to be the catalyst here to decide which song is worse.
It really is.
Would you rather him be just droning about, hey, wait a minute, woo-ha! Or would you rather him be doing what we're about to hear?
Well, let's dive into it and find out. Where you at? Jacksonville, Rochester, Louisville, Jesus Christ. Columbia, Hartford, Milwaukee, and Lewiston, Maine. Where you at? Providence, Nashville, Memphis, Lauderdale, Portland, Orlando, Chicago.
What? That dude, this is the like low hanging fruit of fucking lyricism. It's just, it's almost okay. What's worse, this or doing the whole opposites thing, like that Passenger song, "Let Her Go." You say it's black when you know it's white. You only miss the day when it turns to night. What's worse, that the whole opposites, blue on black, tears on a river, or this shit where they just shout out fucking towns and motherfuckers that they met? What's worse?
It's this, and let me tell you why. Because at least with the opposite thing, there's, you know, it might be incredibly mediocre and boring and lame and unoriginal, but there is at least a moniker of fucking effort. There's a tiny little bit of effort put into that. What you have here is Fred Durst reading a series of bullet points where he's like, okay, I'm going to name 12 cities from the U.S. at random points, and then I'm going to be like, oh, I met a child molester. What rhymes with Worcester? What rhymes with Worcester? I know, a child molester. What the fuck?
Well, I'll go ahead. Look, I can do this. I visit my grandma in Alabama. She's in the slammer, killed a man with a hammer. I met Patrick Michael and Gary. He's a fairy. That place is so scary. I met a podcaster in Rochester named Carl. Think he's a child molester. WATP Live is in Chicago. Book my room and flight on Trivago. It's not fucking hard. He's not Johnny Cash. Okay, look.
No, hey, of course Durst, not.
You're not Johnny Cash, asshole. Not even close. Johnny shouted out 68 cities in his song, I've Been Everywhere. You only fit 44. All right. But don't sweat it, though. Don't sweat it, because it's time for him to starfuck. He's about to starfuck about a dozen people, including God, mom, and some friends that nobody knows, and some artists who appeared on this fucking album.
You know what this is? It just dawned on me. The lyrics to this song are, you know, back when you used to buy physical CDs, you'd open up the sleeve and you'd read the little, you know, the thank you notes from the band. They're like, oh, I want to thank my mom. I want to thank God. I want to thank everyone who was part of the inspiration. That's what this is in a song.
I've read many of those when I was a kid. I'd sit there with the freaking, you know, records, and because back then the print was big enough, you can actually, you know, read the shit. And yeah, that's exactly what this is. Yeah, fucking horrible.
It is. I get silly when I play a Philly Limp Bizkit committee down in Kansas City. Never know what I'm in for when I'm playing Denver. Hard rock, don't stop down in Vegas. The girls call me daddy, and I probably ain't leaving the next time I'm in Cleveland. Found my lucky coin in Des Moines and spit on a boy named Tina in Pasadena. Why a boy named Tina?
He spit on a boy named Tina in Pasadena. Well, you know, he's a known, like, back then he was known for homophobic stuff, calling guys out in the crowd the F slur, things like that. Like, he back then, I guess it, I'm not saying it was okay, but it wasn't necessarily, you weren't going to get canceled for doing it, you know, like you do today.
I'm just going to say it. I liked the lucky coin in Des Moines line. I thought that was good. It's so fucking stupid.
Yeah. Well, you know, like child molester in Worcester. Why Worcester? Why not Rochester? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. You can't pick an easier city to pronounce. It's so fucking stupid. Well, he's a wordsmith, though, at Fred Durst. We got the swing from New Orleans, Fort Worth, and Dallas. We toast when we're tipping up the chalice. Tulsa, St. Louis, Sacco, Mesa, Norfolk, Lawrence, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Northampton, Detroit, Omaha, New York, L.A. What can I say? I can't name them all. He could have at least tried to make that rhyme. Could have tried.
Why bother? At this point, I think he's... Like, any, you know, dignity that he has is already gone.
I think this is the third song that we've done on the show that has gone very hardcore into geography specifically.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know why it becomes a reoccurring theme on this show. I love it. So somebody, anybody, everybody, get the fuck up! He's still begging you.
Okay. I just got up. Tell him to put it on the mic. Though. Show me what you got. Woo!
Show me what you got. Hey, ladies. Oh, shit.
Isn't that Beast Boys?
And then he asks you right after that, who's hot and who's not. He wants the ladies to tell them who's hot and who isn't.
Wasn't that a website, the inspiration for what, Facebook?
I think hotornot.com. Yeah, I think you might be right. I can't help but believe.
and places that I've been. I thank God, Mom and Dad, Adriana, for the love I feel inside. Jordan, my fat ass band. Without them, I'd be nothing but a pumpkin shoved inside a can. Without the fans, there wouldn't be no show. And if that was really so, then life would really blow.
I like how he's going to take the time to name all these people, but he's like, oh yeah, by the way, the rest of the band, they're pretty good too.
Well, that's, yeah, he doesn't give his band, like, where's the, why don't, maybe if he would have said something nice there about Wes Borland, Wes Borland wouldn't have fucking left the band after the next album, you know?
Yeah, well, it's not like he went on to do great things either.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's, I think his house right now that he rebuilt in Detroit, he got like a remodeling show. I don't know if you knew about that.
Oh, did he?
Wes Borland.
Oh shit!
He met some chick in L.A. She's also like a musician, and they blindly bought a house in Detroit back 8-9 years ago. However long it was, when you could buy one for like $10, you know, Detroit just a hellhole. And right. He bought it blind, and they moved into it, and room by room, remodeled each room. And he would like draw on the wall in the room, like what he wanted to do to the room. And then they would do it. And I think that house, I've been getting DMs from my old, you know, bandmates. And they were actually talking about that today. I think it's on the market for like $800,000 or some shit.
Oh, yeah. Shit. So he went the Vanilla Ice route.
He had a TV show. I don't know how long it went or what it was called, but anybody interested could look that up. Well, he's extremely creative.
You say that, but I'm going to, you know, sidestep us a little bit here since we brought it up. I have some very recent Wes Borland music. I don't know if you're familiar with his band or his project Goat Slayer, but
no.
Yeah, this is from 2020, and this is a song called The Feather Serpent. And by the way, this isn't one particular pull from a song. This is the entire album is like this, and you have to ask.
What's up? Why do I feel like Patrick Michael right now when you pulled out Kevin? Why?
Well, I was just going to ask you if what is worse, you think, between Goat Slayer or Kevin? Let's find out.
Oh. Even I shed just a few
more tears. Over 20 songs of that on one album.
What?
Yep. Oh yeah, Goat Slayer. It's a real thing. You can check it out on Spotify. It's the latest. Why
name a band that sounds like it's going to be hardcore metal? Goat Slayer.
Oh
and
yeah.
It's the opposite. It's a 3-year-old with a Casio, you know, toy keyboard.
Yep. So that's what Wes has been up to.
Wow. Sad. All that talent in that.
I agree. He does have some creative shit to him, but tonight we haven't been showing that really all that well.
No.
All right. So back to us. Show me what you got here. More shout outs.
Through the farm, you always got my back. Going for the love and then swapping up the tracks. My brother Corey D, my man Terry Day. We brought it to the plate and he made it sound great. Scott Wild and the Melody Man. If you can't sing it, then nobody can. Wu-Tang Clan.
That Scott Weiland line is like right up there with "My name is Fred and I'm here to say" as far as white boy rapping goes.
Yes.
God damn, this is rough.
Slim Shady, the crazy ass cracker, Stain, a brand new job for your bank. Les Claypool for acting like a fool.
Okay.
And all of the bands for the demos that were cool. I'm so grateful for this life of mine. The ones I didn't think I will some other time. Now I just want somebody, anybody, everybody to get the fuck up.
That means he plans on doing a second shout-out song.
So you want me to get up because you just star-fucked a whole bunch of people, to include Mom, Dad, and God.
Yeah, you know, he called,
me a reason to get up, dude.
Well, you called Les Claypool a fool, man. You can't stand for that.
No, it's not old Les, man. That's my boy.
There you go. God damn.
Well, I mean, there's a reason that this was track 13 right before the outro and a rant from Matt Pinfield, that fucking douchebag, explaining why the world needs Limp Bizkit, because all the boy bands and the cookie cutter crap pop music that's on CDs. You don't want those CDs, man. There's a reason the world need Limp Bizkit. It's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, so get up, guys. Please get up. Why isn't anyone getting the fuck up? God.
Well, they're well known for their Limp Bizkit is well known for their numerous assaults of the sexual nature that were reported during their performance at Woodstock 99, but this retarded frat boy keg stand self high-fiving piece of shit that sits as track 13 on their sophomore release should raise the victim count for the 18 people who actually made it past the song End Together Now on this album to get raped by this backwards red cap wearing self-aggrandizing egomaniac.
God damn. Oh, shit. Well, there's about 40 more seconds left of this audio abortion. Do we need to finish it? Is there anything left to highlight on it?
I mean, that's your call, man. It's your show. If you think the audience needs... I mean, we did cut yours, what we're calling yours, the first one.
All right, let's see if we got it. And show me what you got. That's about it.
Show me what you got.
Yeah, he did. He showed me.
And it was disappointing. Because, like I said, I loved, the first album. I liked at least half of this album, by that point. I mean, I was a fan, but then I heard this shit, and I'm like, that's fucking utter trash. And like, so disappointing. And I was glad that it was at the end of the album, so I didn't have to skip past it.
That's true.
Because by the time I got there, I was already, I didn't really care for the End Together Now, which I think he did with was it Method Man, Red Man, one of those two guys,
both of them.
Yeah. So I really wasn't a big fan of all that stuff anyway. So I never really made it that far in the album.
Yeah, this is bizarre. So, Sophie's Choice, Bob, gun to your head, you got to pick which version of this song is the most offensive to you. Which one's it going to be?
I'm going to say Show Me What You Got. Just even though the vocal parts were, there's a lot more energy there. You could make out most of what he said. It was very audible, good in the mix. But I don't think that was the issue with Cambodia. Cambodia wasn't a mix problem. It was what he said was done poorly. It was kind of mumbled real low and is not really being very intelligible. Whereas this one, maybe if you switch the two, if he would have just put that kind of energy into whatever he said in Cambodia, maybe Cambodia would have been a far, far, far better song.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you on this. Like, Cambodia, it's got moments where I'm into it, And granted, put the whole aspect of it being a live performance aside, just as a song, there are parts where I can get into that. But then, the transitions are very jarring, and it's almost like it's like he forgot what he was going to do with the song, so he just started droning on, spouting nonsense. Show Me What You Got. You could understand what he was saying. The mix was good on it, but it's standard Limp Bizkit. So because of that, I would expect it to be better than this. And I don't care what the fuck he's saying. I'd rather listen to him screaming at you and Ric Flair screams than fucking 4 minutes of him shouting and name dropping.
I'm surprised Ric Flair didn't trademark that woo-ha or that woo that he does, because he might have a case with this one. get a little bit of that Limp Bizkit cash.
I don't know. I think it's gonna be the Vanilla Ice Queen argument where it's like he's not saying it exactly how Ric Flair says it, so you can't get.
Yeah, my song goes. Their song goes do 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 do.
Exactly.
And mine goes do 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 do. I was like, okay.
Goddamn. Well, I gotta agree with you on this one, but it's not really up to either of us. At this point in the episode, you guys know what to do. You go to our Twitter over at Shitty Song Pod, and you get to decide which version of this song is the shittiest version. If you think the original version, Cambodia, is worse than what we actually got with Show Me What You Got, then vote for Cambodia. Otherwise, Show Me What You Got is going to move on for Shitty Song of the Year.
Oh.
Yeah, hell yeah. Awesome. This December is going to be it's really gearing up to something special. I can't wait. It's like the songs are so much worse than last year's. Like, everyone's really bringing their A game with this. I can't wait to tear them all apart.
Awesome.
Yeah, but Bob, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and bringing a real interesting twist to this. You know, if we, I'd like to see if we can find more songs that are like this and continue doing this. But is there anything you want to plug before we wrap it up?
Not really. I'm Boomer Bob. I do the Boomer Bob Show. I do some other stuff. I used to do the Bullhorn podcast with Philly fanatic, but he rage quit on us over there at the Rubberneckers podcast. So, and then he blames me for it. So anyway, yeah, that was my fault. I was the one who kind of instigated it. So I made one too many donut jokes. Even though he and I, behind the scenes, we had talked to each other, because if you haven't noticed, I stutter. I've had a stuttering problem since I was 5 years old. And I've told him, if it's for comedy purposes during a show, make fun of it.
Right.
If it's going to make somebody laugh, go for it. You're not going to hurt me, dude. I've been bullied by the fucking best. You ain't shit. And in return, if I make a joke, does it bother you that I make a little, like a donut joke here and there? He's like, no, man, that's cool. You know, no. I said, if I ever go too far, you just let me know. Let me know. Cause I don't want to be a dick. And right. He was like, no, man, if it makes the show funnier, then do it. So I guess I went too far with it. So,
yeah, God, if you can't handle a simple donut joke, then you probably shouldn't be doing this shit anyway.
Well, yeah, that I think that's over there at Man Brain Dave's Patreon. It's Content Kings is his Patreon. So anybody wants to hear that, I think you have to hit the $3 tier for that shit to get that. The video is so much better than the audio. You get to see all of us because there's five of us on screen, and you get to see John, just his arms are flailing around, and we're just over there kind of with just this grin on our face, like, hurry up, are you done? Hurry up, are you done? And then he takes his mic and he like swings it into the wall just a little bit where it goes king. And it's like, nobody cared. We just went on to the next topic. So it was to watch it is so much better than just the audio version. So anyway,
bad fucking passion. But that's going to wrap it up for tonight, guys. So as always, this has been Brandon, and until next time,